And welcome back to the Constitutionals Podcast. I'm your host, Chad White. If you didn't know, this is the premier podcast for the website C Plus Comedy. Like I just said, it's a website. Go there. Episode 241. This is the episode with Mo Welch. That's what it's called. This is Mo Welch. Well, this is Chad. And if you're listening to the audio version of this show, in a couple of minutes, you'll hear about me talk about Mo Welch, who's a wonderful comedian / storyteller, if anything. And we had a conversation a couple of weeks ago talking about her the latest, not stand-up show, what is it called? One-person show. Mole. It was a short-run thing that only ran in New York for 2 days, and it was a part of the Cherry Lane Theater's A Summer of Comedy. And it was presented by actor and trans icon, Elliot Page. Don't know why I read that part. Mole was part of Mo's animated illustrations. It was like illustrations with live stand-up comedy, and it was great to explore. Now, I didn't see the show, but I've seen her stand-up, and I've seen Mo's illustrations. Love them both. I don't know why they wouldn't work together. Talked about her attachment issues and her formerly attached mole. Mo's great. You've seen her on, if you watched Conan on TBS, then you have definitely seen her stand-up. If you watched it as religiously as I did, first of all, then you've definitely seen her do stand-up. She is a fantastic comedian, and there's one joke, I'm not kidding, and I told this to her during the interview, that I had been thinking about for years, so much so that I thought I wrote it myself, but I've been thinking about it for years, and then it was reminded to me that she said it when I was rewatching some clips from Conan. It's a very funny joke. It involves those stickers on the back of cars where, like, it's the family and the stick figures, and they're all, it's like a mom and a dad, or, you know, whoever's in your family, and a bunch of kids or pets or whatever. Anyway, that was a joke I've been thinking about for years. I'm not joking. I think about that joke all the time, constantly. So much, and I thought it was me. I thought it was when I wrote that, but I did not. So anyway, check out this interview with Mo Welch, and then we will come back with this episode of the Constitutionals Podcast. You can find Mo Welch online at various places, such as Twitter, Instagram, that's it. Follow her on Instagram at Momo Welch, M-O-M-O Welch, where you can see her illustrations, as well as some stand-up. And then find her on Twitter at same thing, Momo Welch. Very funny person. I enjoy her work. And her hair has changed, is all I can say. Any Hoosers, check this interview out, and we will be back in a second. Here we go. It looks like you're in a cozy spot there with that the green background. Got that jacket on that it seems to be out of season.
I know it's like probably 90 degrees out, but the AC was on in here, and I'm like, why am I so cold?
That's such a my AC's been out for like 2 weeks. They finally fixed it, I think, like 2 days ago, Wednesday, and it was the most, it was so frustrating to just be like sweating all the time and gross, and yeah, now I'm happy that I'm cold all the time, because now I'm leaving it on like freezing, because that's what we deserve.
I actually can't handle like when I first moved out to LA, because you know it'll be like 90 degrees in December. Mm-hmm. But it would be like, I was going on a lot of auditions when I first came to LA, and I'd have to like put a change of shirt in my Volvo, because I had this old Volvo that had no AC and leather seats. Yeah. And I would just be like sweating when I showed up. And yeah, that's the reason I didn't get the part.
the only reason. Did you like the auditioning process? Are you still doing that?
No, I've kind of opted out of it. I only go if it's like, you know, if they ask for me. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's just not, my forte.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the
it's
only
part of stand up, you know, you just, yes. you're like, wait, you're like, why aren't you laughing? You know,
the, the only like the exposure I have to auditioning is La La, like essentially what La La Land is, the beginning of that movie where Emma Stone, she spills the coffee on herself and she has to wear the big parka inside to do the audition and like other things like that. So I mean, yeah, the way you're describing it, it sounds exactly as it is, and it sounds like it's the worst thing in the entire world.
It's so much sadder than that scene too, because you have like you show up in a room, and a lot of times it's really I've had some shady auditions where you're going into warehouses and there's like holes in the wall, and you're like, is this the way to the audition? And then you get in there and the waiting room has, 15 people that look like you. It's just like you're like, oh, okay, well, if any of these people took acting classes, they're gonna get it over me.
Did you so you didn't take any acting classes? You just did you always start in stand up, or how did you get your start in the industry?
Yeah, it's been I started as an improviser, but that lasted, I think I did improv for like 3 more months than I did stand up. I pretty quickly got into stand up. And I never really yeah, I didn't really take the acting route because I can act like I'm myself, and I guess I could do a bit of like funny characters, but that world is like a whole I always felt for actors when they would go to an audition and they wouldn't get it because it's so hard to book something. And then they go back and they just like don't have anything to kind of go fall back on. But like I could always go and do open mics or, shows and at least feel like I'm getting some sort of something out there into the world.
And that kind of extends into the show Mole. It's I didn't see it because it was a live thing and I wasn't invited. But I think that's great that you can put together not just like a stand-up set, but like a show on its own and develop something and make this project into reality, put it on and have a couple hundred people see it. And that's what it is. It lives in that space, and so that's what you're able to do as a comedian, as a performer, just make that live show and make it happen.
Yeah, exactly. And Mole is like a special show because, I think with stand up, everyone's like, well, what are you working towards? Are you working towards an album or, a special? And Mole is kind of lives, I don't know if it could be a special, like maybe, but it's very much made for the stage because I'm telling jokes and stories to the crowd, but as I'm doing that, there's like this huge screen behind me, and I've like drawn the entire show as well. And so there's like an hour of visual art and then me speaking. And yeah, it's fun to make something where you're like, this is made for the stage. I don't have any other goals with
Did you
it.
I've seen a lot of your drawings on Instagram, and it's very not is not a knock, very simplistic, so it's very approachable, and I can scroll through and like it's like candy, just like I can have a handful of Skittles. This is my handful. I can have a handful of Skittles and eat everything. Just like I could just scroll through and go, oh, this is good, this is this one, and keep going. When did you start drawing that art?
I started drawing that about 8 years ago. I was I've always been I've always drawn, but then I took a really long break, and then I started with that character, and I wanted, even when I was drawing the very first one, I wanted it to be super simple, and it looks way like more like beta, like the very first versions of it, and then I kind of like made it a little more little better for the eye, but it's I like art that I feel like people can imitate. Like if, a kid wanted to draw the Blair character, they could. I feel like I always drew Garfield as a child. And so I like, and for me, like as a writer, I wanted to be able to have the joke speak for itself. So it's like the art doesn't have to be like so intricate. It's the art is simple. And then hopefully, the joke is technically simple, but that's the that's what makes it special, hopefully, is both of those combined.
I wish what I used to draw when I was a child, when I like from like fifth grade or third or fourth grade until middle of high school. I drew these comics of a superhero, and his whole thing was he was a superhero, but he was also incredibly stupid. And they look exactly the same. Like even if I drew today, like that character would be that. And then I interviewed a couple years ago the director of SpongeBob SquarePants. And to start out the interview, I thought I'd break the ice with a drawing of SpongeBob that was so bad. It was just like a square and circles. He did not laugh, and it did not play in my favor. So you, at least you have, you have the stand-up talent, and then you also have the drawing talent with the jokes. So that works for you. For everyone else, not so much.
Well, why did you stop drawing?
It was I really like a story, and I was and in these comics I'd done maybe 400 or so like comics, and I just thought it just got it got to be a little bit difficult to continue to operate on them. Like I can like they're all in that closet behind me, and I can go back there, pick out one, or pick out like I have a list of ideas that for the same comic, and it's just hard to continue. I would love to to start over, and draw it digitally, and see what comes of that. But I it you know the thing is just having to start it, and I don't have the kind of chutzpah for that. Like I can do this, but that I have to work, I have to build myself up into.
Yeah, it's a lot of work, especially if you're doing full comics, you know. It's just, and that's why this made sense, because I go, hey, I'm gonna do this once, I'm gonna do at least one when I wake up. And it helped me get out of part of my show, Mole, is about me starting to draw again and it getting me out of like this depression. And because, I mean, it makes sense. It's like you're, when you're drawing, you're living right then. Like I'm living in the moment when I'm drawing. And even like, even when I'm on stage, sometimes I'm not living in the moment because I know the words so well that like I find myself thinking about things as I'm talking, which is like, that just shows you how, you know, ADD I can be. But like, so giving myself a task, I said, you know what, this isn't, I have no goal with this, which helps me a lot. Just saying like my only goal is to draw one a day and then I'll like post it. But there's no, at that time there was no, oh, I want to have a book, I want this to be like an animated show. I was just like, this is for me and for my friends.
And when did that extend into the? I've watched the animated shorts from TBS. So when did that extend into that world? Was that easy for you to go, I'm going to make these 3-minute shorts, or was it kind of difficult for you to want to do something like that?
It was no, I think at that point it had become, I had already had the book deal at that point, and so I was like, I knew that I was already expanding this into something else, and I wanted it to be an animated show, so TBS gave me like, it was like independent, like they gave me the money and then I made them with my friend Hank Thompson, and we just like sat in his room and we like, he had just learned to animate, so it was very, you know, we were like learning as we went. And so, and then from there I got Chelsea Handler on board, and we wrote like a, you know, I wrote a half hour script. And that hasn't gone anywhere yet, but it's like maybe, you know, maybe it will at some point. But yeah, it's easy to expand her character into like, a lot of people describe her as like an older Daria. So it's, I love writing for a character that's like pessimistic in a world like that's just, you know, a lot of seemingly positive influencers, you know, that she can kind of like, we can just write her in contrast to them. It's super fun.
The older Daria is exactly as I would do, and from what I've seen. It's were there any influences that you aped from when you were starting out with this character?
I mean, at that point, I don't know if I had any, but I mean, I loved Garfield. You can see the love for Garfield in it, sort of. And then Kathy, I thought was amazing growing up. You know, because that's like truly my career ambition would be I can draw cartoons and then go on as a guest, as a late night guest, because that's what she, the creator of Kathy, would do. And she would be so funny, like on Jay Leno and whatnot. I'm like, that's the life. You get to go be funny for 5 minutes and then just draw for a living.
That's a good goal. Because that reminds me a lot of, Colbert and Seth Meyers. They have, Meyers is like very proud of like having authors on, and Colbert has a lot of business people on. So I think we need to bring back more cartoonists. Like we should have and including like the New York Times crosswords people and regular cartoonists and yeah, I would love to see more of those people, even though they're slightly above, regular people who do regular jobs, and then they're slightly in the middle of entertainers and yeah, I would love that. That's a great idea.
Yeah, they're funny in a different way. Like you can get some pretty odd, I mean, obviously there's some odd comedians, but I've met a lot of odd cartoonists where I would just like be, you know, be completely comfortable trying to pick their brain for 3 hours.
Speaking of the odd comedian, your stand up, I want to talk about one joke in particular that I truly I've thought about for years, and then at one point I thought I wrote it myself. It's the pulling the dad sticker off the car joke. I'm not kidding. I think about that joke minimum one time a week. And because I see, because you'll see them driving around with the dad sticker. But my elevation of that joke was, because that's again, at some point I thought I'd written that. But my elevation of the joke is, they get into a crash, and then you wonder if everybody's all right, but then one sticker falls off. It's yeah, I love that. I love your
That's
joke. I
funny.
love your take on it. It's the divorce thing's so funny.
It's so it's you know when you do a joke, because I did that on Conan, and so I didn't do that joke, like I haven't done that joke on stage since then, I think. And I'm preparing for an album right now, and you, that's exactly what you're doing, like how you just elevated the joke. I'm like, how can I tag this joke more? And so I'm sure the joke will get even, I'm hoping it'll get even better. But yeah, I was obsessed with those stickers, and I did have merch at one point, which was Blair, and then it said just me underneath it. And I made the stickers, and a couple of my friends, people bought them, but it was like, yeah, I made the just me sticker so people could. I should bring those back, actually.
People love buying things, and like if they, especially if they love you, they will take that and show you off, and yeah, I think you could definitely do that again. Now, are you still a WNBA fan?
Oh yeah, but I mean, actually, my wife just got me for my birthday. She got me season tickets to the Sparks next year. So next season is going to be a big season for me. Big year of me just sitting at, you know, crypto arena
For sure.
with the Sparks. But yeah, I love really early on, I was trying to get WNBA jokes in there, and at the beginning, it was me trying to show the pay gap, but I felt like it sounded like I was shitting on the WNBA, and so I had to switch it around because I didn't want it to, like I'm in support of the WNBA and I wanted to talk about it on stage, and so that's when I came up with the song. So it's like, well, what if I like try to teach the crowd, all like tell them, if you know the WNBA teams, like you will be like, everybody will love you, like every female will love you, anyone in the WNBA will love you. So that was just me trying to teach one. I think one time on stage I was like, let me see if I could teach you guys all of the teams, and then I put it into that song that you would learn things, you know, memorizing song when you were a kid. To yeah, so it was, you know, it'd be like LA Sparks and New York Liberty, and then I constructed that, and that was honestly just to try to see if I could teach people the teams.
And you know what? It's even catchier now, especially because to that tune. And yeah,
Right.
I like the WNBA. I admittedly I don't watch it as much as the NBA proper, but I do have friends and
Honestly,
people.
me too. Yeah.
Yeah, like it's hard too because you know it's like if you don't have cable or streaming cable or whatever, then you can't watch it unless it's going to be on ABC or NBC or whatever it's going to be on. But I think this season has been more publicized than seasons of the past because now I know that, well, obviously, A, the pay gap. Like I knew that like years ago, but then B, it's who's
Yeah.
retiring, who's leaving, who's deciding not to continue in the career aspect of the WNBA. It's good that we can continue to talk about these, but like we need to elevate them in the same respects that we have those the guys in the regular NBA.
Oh yeah, and a big part of it I think was like, Kobe was a real, he's a huge proponent on the WNBA and women's basketball, and and honestly there's like these photos of him from 4 years ago or whatever where he's wearing the WNBA hoodie, and then the WNBA hoodie became like this thing that like other guys wanted to wear. And so with the help of the guys in the NBA, the WNBA becomes more popular. And especially if some of them will just come out and say, hey, stop trolling the WNBA and stop trolling female athletes. Like, I think that will be huge when like LeBron can be like, hey, just stop trolling them. Like, this isn't about you saying like that you could be any WNBA player. But anyway, I'm obsessed. I think it's all, I love basketball. I'll watch, if it's on TV, I'll be watching like high school championships. I just love watching the game. And I watch, the Bulls have not been great. But I watched almost all the Lakers, I watch more NBA games too, but also there's so many more NBA games.
So, and there's so many more chances to watch them. Like they're all, you know, if they're sometimes they're all on at the same time. It's and you
Yeah.
just you have to pick and choose, like, okay, I'll go to this game, I'll go to this game. I wanted to know, oh, what team would you be on for WNBA if you could choose, if you were still playing?
Yeah, I mean, I'd have to be on the Sparks because I live here, so that'd just be convenient. But if not, I'm going to the Chicago Sky and I'm going to play with Candace Parker. Who was just outside of my conference in high school, because we had heard when I was playing, because I'm from outside of Chicago, and Candace, like someone had said, hey, there's a girl who can like dunk. And we were like, what? Like, yeah, there's a girl in Naperville who can dunk. And we're just like, okay, so we thought we were bad now, and now we're like, people are dunking. We're not gonna have a great season.
And you're from Normal, Illinois, correct?
Yeah, I'm from Normal, and then when I was 12, I moved up to a place called Oak Park, which is outside of Chicago. And I went to high school at Oak Park River Forest High School. It's a bit of a mouthful.
Did you perform stand up in Chicago at all?
Yeah, I started in Denver. I was there for like I want to say a year, and then I moved back home to Chicago, and I was there for probably 4 years. And I was like very deeply in the scene there. And then me and a bunch of other Chicago comics moved out in the same year out to LA.
And so you've planted your seeds in LA. You've got your LA fan, Laker fan, you got Sparks fan. Are you there to stay? Is that where you're going to build the rest of your career?
Well, I probably would have left because it's not that I failed LA, but I feel like I've done, you know what I mean? Where I'm like, oh, I have to be in LA. And I think anyone else in my position would be like, let me try to do this somewhere else. Let me, move to a different city. But I married somebody from LA, and then we had a kid, and I think that we just are stuck here. And it's a good place to be stuck, but I for sure would have been like, I'm going to New York because I can get more stage time there. So it's its own challenge trying to do stand up and live a life out here. But yeah, I've been out here for 10 years, so it's like I feel like a native.
Yeah. You gotta basically
Yeah.
have to buy a burial plot now.
I know. Yeah, I'm gonna have to get buried in hopefully whatever that famous one is called. Forest Lawn.
Yes, that'll be perfect. Mo, I appreciate you for spending time with me today. This has been very fun, very
Yes, so great to meet you.
yeah, it's I'm glad I could finally crack down on that dad the pulling off the sticker joke. Oh my God, because I truly thought, yes, I wrote that myself, and then I was my mind was rejiggered, and then I went, that's it, that's where I heard it from. So
Yeah.
when oh, go on.
Oh no. Yeah, it's just one of those it's one of those jokes I've heard a couple since. It's like parallel thinking, because I think everybody looks at those stickers when there's like 15 on the back of a car and you're like, huh. I'm
Too many.
like, that's too many cats. That's too many children.
when do you think that you're gonna be done with the album?
The album I'm going to be actually probably October 7th. I will be recording it in Chicago at the Lincoln Lodge,
Wow.
and then so however long it takes to put that out, let's see how many edits I have to do on myself. So hopefully by the end of the year, yeah, I'm still trying to find a name for it. So open to names.
Hey, no worries, of
The
course.
title.
Well, you
Yeah.
know what? Congratulations on Mole. Congratulations on working on
Thank
the
you.
album. You're doing a great job, even if nobody says you're doing a fantastic job. And thanks again for talking to me today.
Thank you.
And we're back. Welcome back to the show. You do the right thing when you edit I could just cut a spot here and boom, that's where all that goes. That's where all that goes. That'd be the title of this episode if it wasn't for Mo Welch. But we got an interview, so that's good. And then I have another interview with somebody next week. I've started at one point I stopped saying yes to this is gonna sound so mean. There and the rule still stands. If someone sends me somebody who I've never heard of and does not have a body of work, then I like a substantial, but that doesn't mean like they have to be successful. I'm talking about a body of work that I could review and go, okay, I want to talk to this person. Then there's no point in me talking to this person, because sometimes I'll get offers for people who have like 50 followers. I'm like, I have more followers than you. You can't. We can't have a conversation. It'll just be two regular people talking. But then when I get somebody like the person I have next week, or Mo or Alyssa, people who I can either see do their work or who I know, then it's fine. It's good. I can go, all right, great. This person's great. When I get bigger names, when I get huge names, not saying that those names are big, but I'm gonna say when I get bigger names, when I get your Jimmy Pardos, when I get your Maria Bamfords, your Ron Funcheses, that's when I go, yeah, immediately. There is one person, I'd have already told the story. I've already told this version of the story where this version, this story, where I reached out and to this person on their website, and they're huge, like they're big, not like Bill Burr. I don't know why I can think of Bill Burr, but they're big and they're on television, and they've been doing stand up for a long time. And I reached out to this person, they responded to me personally. That'll be great. Let me reach out to my people. And then the people said no immediately. I've also been trying to get Nicole Byer for the longest amount of time, but that's not gonna happen. I can't believe there was one point I had Tiff. I was this close to Tiffany Haddish right before she went belly up, like big. It was right after Girls Trip, right before she exploded for that second time. It was right after Girls Trip. I'm so pissed. I could have had Tiffany. Could have seen me on the front page of Variety. There was an interview. There was a profile piece that Variety did for Billy Eichner for his movie Bros, which is going to be a queer love story produced by Judd Apatow and Nicholas Stoller. Now, I do like all three of those gentlemen. and par for the course with Nick Stoller and Judd Apatow movies. No people of color in that film, with the exception, I'm talking about people on the poster. Like if they had a poster and it was like seven names, and if one of those names is not a person of color, then that's how I know I can't see that movie. I would love, I want to support it, but you know, let's get some darkies in there. I'm serious. That ties in with our first story. This comes from David Folkenfilk. That was from NPR. People of color at New York Times get lower ratings and job reviews, Union says. So this story is from a couple weeks ago, but it still is prominent in my mind, at least. The New York Times, for all intents and purposes, for the past, I think, maybe couple of months, has been putting out stories about the Washington Post, how they have job cuts, or you know, someone else in their what's it called? In their aura, in their medium. And it only makes sense that they get the same treatment back. And Folkenfilk is right. A thousand, there's data, comprehensive data for 1,000 New York Times employees that were conducted by of the union, conducted by members of the union, that represents its newsroom, found that Black and Latino staffers are far less likely to get there than their white peers to receive strong job ratings. So what they're saying is that when it comes to job reviews, when you're in the middle of a job, you get a performance review, and the white staffers often got higher scores. Here comes a quote from the News Guild chapter, representing employees of the New York Times. Being Hispanic reduced the odds by receiving a high score of about 60, and being Black cut the chances of high scores by nearly 50%. 60% and 50%, excuse me. That's for a publication that tries to tout its diversity and culture, I mean, and the same thing can go for NPR as well, because we know that they've had their own issues with race. For you know, for a lot of these, it's like the not the pot calling the kettle black, but the kettle calling the kettle calling the pot calling the kettle calling the pot black. It's none of these publications, from Wall Street Journal to New York Times, I'm gonna keep going, NPR, the ones that I read, NPR, Atlantic, New Yorker, New York Magazine, Vox, those are the main ones I read. Oh, and that's it. That's those are the main ones. But those are the ones that talk about this stuff and report on this stuff. They all do the same thing. Like, I don't think there's, what I'm saying is there's never really a change, and that doesn't feel like there's going to be a change at any point soon. Especially if you hear tennis in the background, I am watching Andy Murray come back. I do not have it on currently. Actually, I need to just hit the microphone. I also need to add, doesn't really matter anyway. I was gonna turn the timer on. So maybe I could turn the whatchamacallit, the game on here. I mean, I got to pay attention to the show. Anyway, you just watched me work that in real time. It's just kind of unfair, especially when the ones who were told to report on these stories, or their handful of, like, I'm sorry, not on these stories, on stories that center around race and stuff, or the handful of brown people that they have, taking them off of beats that they typically cater to. So the analysis was started about 2 years ago, and you know, nothing huge has changed in the past 2 years. They need to build a diverse staff. They need to hire people who are diverse. It doesn't. It's just if they, so it's all starts from the bottom. So if they want the diverse staff, but they need to hire people who are diverse, they're not interviewing people who are diverse. I know this because I have applied to multiple jobs. Not Wall Street Journal, New York Times, and The Wire Cutter. And it just, and I mean, I think I have the skills to do it, but if the people, you know, let's look at Washington Post, they recently hired Taylor Lorenz off of New York Times. If you're going to keep hiring the same people who look like her, no offense to her, she's a great writer, and I'm in love with her. But if you're going to keep hiring people that look like her, then it's just, you're kind of shooting yourself in the foot when it comes to diversity. And even if she, you know, is, she does fit one sect of diversity, she, like a young white woman, she is still a white person who is going, always going to have those opportunities above the young black woman or the young trans Asian person, you know? So there needs to be an active role in hiring somebody who, yes, a who can work for the company, who can put out the amazing work, which I'm sure there are a metric crap ton of people who can do that. You're just looking at the same 12 types of people, the brunettes, the blondes, the guys with glasses, the guys without glasses, the white guys with beards, the guys without beards. One former New York Times reporter who is Asian American told NPR she wept after getting mediocre job ratings, even though she had received positive verbal assessments. This all comes with this is like applied bias. This is, I stopped watching this season of Big Brother because I don't like showmances. I truly don't on any competition show. You're there to win a prize. Just like in college, someone asked me, I went to a bachelor trip weekend last week, and someone asked me, "Oh, do you like sports?" And I only named, professional sport, NFL, MLB, NBA, NHL. I only watch professional sports because when you're in college, you're there to go to college. You're like it's like 1% of them goes to the league to their professional leagues. Anyway, you're there for college and you're there to learn. And if my children decide to go, if God forbid, if I have children, Jesus, oh, if a woman will kiss me. But you're there for college. College first, sports second. And what was I getting at? But anyway, I just said, yeah, they're there for college. Anyway, the point is, because I forgot the point I was trying to make. The point is, they just hire diverse outside of who you're comfortable with. Anyway, I was talking about Big Brother. Talking about Big Brother. So Big Brother, they knocked out a competitor I really liked, a person I really liked, and because they did a split down the house, and then one group was outside, one group was inside the entire week, and they knocked out. There's a guy outside that I really really liked, and because of Showmance, got ahead of him, and not him. He wasn't a part of Showmance. It was a different. Anyway, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. So this guy was knocked out, and so I'm gonna stop watching. And then I woke up on Friday this morning, the morning that I'm recording this. So this morning, the Friday morning, where and they talked about. I saw an article about how the person that was knocked out this week, who was part of the Showmance, said went to the remaining white competitors. And said, "We need to form our own alliance." I'm paraphrasing this, but he said the cookout last season, cookout was of all the black competitors got together, so they could take control of the house for the first time in Big Brother history, because all of the brown people would get knocked out of the show. So the black competitors decided to get together and say, "We're not taking this anymore." And so this gentleman, this young man goes, who grew up in Mormon, Utah. And now I guess he's not a Mormon anymore, but when I say he's a TikTok influencer, he dances, he does all that stuff. And he's like, if you say, I'm looking for a bland white person, this is the guy you're looking for. His name is Kyle. And, he said, he went all the white competitors and said, we have to make our own team. We have to come together and make our own team because we can't stand for this. And I don't think I think it's passive racism. It's not active racism, it's passive racism. It's like you can be passive aggressive or actively aggressive. This is passive racism. I don't think he's inherently racist because he grew up in Podunk, Utah with a bunch of people that look like him, a bunch of blonde-haired, blue-eyed people. And he saw the first white woman on a show who happened to grow up in the opposite of Utah. Well, which is the same. It is the Utah of the South, Florida. And he happened to start liking her, even though there's a plethora of other women on that show he could have talked to. But anyway, and I think it's just like who you grow up with, who you choose to be friends with. Not, I mean, at this point, he's an adult and he should know he can be friends with and talk to other people who don't look like him. But that goes for the same, that's the same thing here. Is that, no, even if you live in New York, even if you're living in Washington, when you have these biases as a white person, they can be sitting in the back of your head. And like, it's like here, I live here in Midtown Atlanta, and I live in a neighborhood that is I would call the Brooklyn of Atlanta, and it's just a bunch of white people from the suburbs. It used to be a black neighborhood, but a bunch of white people from the suburbs came down, and I don't want to say it's gentrification because the neighborhood did need it. There's parts of the city that did need it, and there's parts of the city that frankly don't. But they added stuff to it, and now people from mostly white suburban areas of Georgia, when they graduate from high school, they go, or they graduate from college, they go, all right, I'm gonna move to the city. And they're surprised when I'm walking through the parking garage or I'm running down the street. There's a black person. It's not like that. But anyway, New York Times, get your stuff together. This is a clean show. Get your stuff together. Diversity efforts need to, as much as they start at the bottom, they also come from the top as well. So you need to have higher people in positions, higher people. You need to have dark people in position, brown people in positions. Where if I can't read your, this is gonna sound, look, people on LinkedIn always messaging out of the blue. Oh my God, I hate it so much. I'm a TV producer asking me, hey, do you want to be a doctor's assistant? No, I can't. I'm a recruiter. Anyway, hire brown people who can do these jobs. Because they can do their jobs just as well as these white staffers. According to the most recent figures, and I'll finish on this, posted publicly by the paper last year, people of color made up 33% of the company and 23% of its leadership positions in 2020. Both were up 2% from the previous year. The paper set the goal to double the share of African American Hispanic colleagues by 2025. However, the company said that attrition, there's a workforce attrition, black African, black slash African, and Latino slash Hispanic colleagues. Maybe I don't know. If people are African, maybe just call them African. If people are Latino, call them Latino. There's different nationalities in there. Just saying. Colleagues left at the elevated at elevated rates. Yeah, because they weren't being treated well. That's the thing. Anyway, it's all bullcrap. Let's move on. This comes from The Hollywood Reporter, written by Scott Roxborough. Netflix owns the festival season, but still won't release its movies in theaters. Netflix, for the past couple of years, since I would say Okja, there has been a, especially when it comes to the Cannes Film Festival and the Oscars, there have been rules set that movies need to go to theaters if you want them to be considered for those prestigious places, those for those prestigious awards and prestigious festivals and everything. They need to go to theaters for, I think, like a couple of weeks. And every single year, Netflix, ever since Okja, they've had to comply. And every single year, they've put their movies in theaters for at least in America for at least 2 weeks. So the movie Roma, for instance, was in theaters for a couple of weeks. And I think I've definitely seen a couple of Netflix movies that were meant for Netflix in theaters. Not a lot, but just a couple. Not The Irishman. I wish I'd seen that in theaters because I think I watched that. Oh, I was in the old apartment. I was in the old apartment. I remember watching that on a Sunday, and I said, I'm gonna watch this movie. And I remember at one point I had to start making dinner, and I got up. None of this means anything. So there's four movies that are in competition at the Venice Film Festival that started this week. White Noise, which is a movie from Noah Baumbach, who, hey, coincidentally, makes movies that are just called, that are basically white noise, that star white people, and it's just a bunch of noise. The company also has the Blonde movie, the NC-17 Blonde with Ana de Armas, who recently said she doesn't know why the movie's NC-17. Like, there's a lot of other things in other movies that should require those movies to be rated NC-17. I mean, unless there's like a nude scene where she's getting railed by JFK, I don't see why this movie should be rated NC-17. I want to put this inside you. That's pretty good. All right, cool. Oh boy, it's hot in here, isn't it? Also, my air was out for 2.5 weeks. It's frustrating. Roman Garvis's French drama Athena and Alejandro Gonzalez Iñárritu's Mexican epic Bardo. They're all gonna be in this festival. I just recently learned about Bardo and I'm so excited. It's gonna be 3 hours. Spanish, a Mexican language film. Mexican language film. A Spanish language film. I said Spanish the first time. But none of these theaters are expected to be doing the regular release of like Top Gun Maverick, which is the only movie for the past 3 years to be put in theaters and to be stretched past that the date where it should be on streaming. Like that movie is not going to hit just hit digital and it's still in theaters. That movie is not going to hit Blu-ray and DVD until November 1st, and I'm pissed. I need to buy this movie. I'm not buying it digitally. I need to buy it physically. I'm buying things physical again now. For a couple of years I put that off, but the PlayStation Sony, they took away the PlayStation Video Store. I think I talked about this last time. I don't know. And people who, I mean, obviously you shouldn't, if your store doesn't hook up to like Movies Anywhere, if the movie store doesn't hook up to Movies Anywhere, then you should not buy your movies in one place and have like on the AMC on demand, the AMC theaters, you can buy movies from there. I don't know why you would. I would never do that. But Sony closed down the PlayStation Video Store and now people lost access to all their movies. So that, I've been saying this for years. Apple, Amazon, Google, they could all go, we don't want to do movies or TV anymore. We're done. And they could shut it down and you could never have access to things. So things I love, I'm buying physically. That doesn't go for video games, sadly, unless it's like it's like the Xbox 360, PS3 era. Because PS4 and Xbox One, everything is, you have to, basically the disc is a key that allows you to download these games, which sucks, but that's what happens. So we'll figure that out. Emulation. That's why people emulate because of this deal. Anyway, let's get back to this. The streaming is a priority over at Netflix, and that is it is a problem when it comes to the film community. Netflix not and people criticize it. All the awards that came from Roma, which won the Venice, the awards from Venice, the Venice Film Festival. It won BAFTAs, Golden Globes, DGAs, Directors Guild, and Independent Spirit Awards, and 3 Oscars. It could have had a really good opening at the theaters if it had a weight behind it. But Netflix is saying streaming is the only thing we can do. We're going to do 2-week releases and that's it. But now I think as Netflix readies its ad supported offering, it's, what is it, PVOD? Is that what it's called? Anyway, I don't know. I forgot the term. Is ad offering the, it's going to be $7 or $8 and they're upping it. It was going to come out next year, but now I think they upped it to this year sometime around Thanksgiving so that they could, or prior to Thanksgiving, so that they could beat Disney to the punch, is what I read. I don't know if that's the thing. So it's, we got to, anyway, the ad offering. I wonder if that's a change for them because they said they'll never do ads. It makes me think that they could go to theater. Like, just put your movie on theaters. Put your movie in theaters. You'll make the same amount. I know they don't want to split the money with, you know, the likes of AMC or even your local art house theater. But still, I would love to see something good like The Irishman in theaters. I pay to go see things. I saw Dragon Ball Super last week, or 2 weeks ago. It was fantastic. Oh my God, children were talking the entire time. But it was fantastic to see that movie in theaters. The Italian Culture Ministry asked for a 90-day mandatory theatrical window for all movie releases. And there's France is doing the same thing, who does the Cannes Film Festival. There's one person who's the head of theatrical distribution at a place studio. Gabrielle DeAndrea says instead of blaming Netflix, it's the art house theaters and distributors that need to take a page out of the promotional playbook and learn to turn specialty releases into events. Yeah, you know, that also does make sense. So if, I mean, if Netflix plays ball and decides to say, hey, we're gonna put, you know, Roma 2. Vine, I don't know. There's multiple to Cherry, Roma 2, Vine and Jerry, and those type of tomatoes guys. Inside of theaters, then, you know, in the artisan film section, then we're gonna say, hey, you know, the first, I mean, this also works hand in hand with Netflix as well. You know, AMC and Netflix, or whomever, you know, these art house theaters and Netflix work together and go, we'll give you a month free of Netflix or something. Actually, I think they got rid of trials, but you know, give them swag, make them event pieces. I've been to premieres, I've been to showings of movies. And they, you know, if it's an A24 film, I remember I got tickets to, what is that movie that Jonah Hill made? Jonah Hill, that he directed, that I cannot for the life of me remember. I can't remember this movie for anything. It came out mid-90s. I went to a premiere of that, and they gave us a giant zine and a skateboard, a toy skateboard, like a tech deck, and something else. So I would definitely love to see them turn into event pieces. That's, you know, it's some of these movies can be, I don't care if they're at home. Again, I will go see it in theaters if it's good enough. If not like, you know, Rotten Tomatoes, oof, it's got a 72 on the tomato meter, certified fresh. None of that stuff. I'm saying if it's something I'm interested in, like Dragon Ball Z, Super, Dragon Ball Super, Superhero, then yeah, I'm gonna go see it regardless. And then if I like it, like for In the Heights, I saw In the Heights the day it came out on HBO Max. I saw it and I went, this is fantastic. Like I was, and then the next day, I had a date, and I told this person we're gonna go see In the Heights. And she was like, did you see it? And I was like, yeah, I saw it. And then I watched it multiple times. I think I saw it one more time in theaters, and then I saw it on streaming again. Just, well, I mean, that was just like La La Land. Oh my God. I saw La La Land way too much. I saw La La Land four times in theaters, which is too much for one person. Three or four times in theaters, and then it came out on Blu-ray like almost immediately after that. I have to do my time card. I just realized that. We had you know, being at HBO is great. I love it. It's my favorite job, and I hope I continue working there. This next one comes from Hollywood Reporter, speaking of streaming movie services. Written by Alex Weprin. Streaming's battle of the bundles era begins. There's too many S's. This is something I've been saying for a long time now. This is something that I think literally every person in the world could see. Every person that said, I'm going to stop paying for cable. I'm going to pay for streaming. Oh, there's a lot of streaming out. Uh-oh. Too much streaming out. What do I do? Subscription and streaming services have, especially the plethora of them, have marked not the end of cable, but the slimming down of cable. And then we got to a point where YouTube TV and Hulu with live TV and Fubo and Sling and those, the likes of those, have become a little bit. I'm not going to say YouTube TV is obviously dominant, but I'm not going to say that those are the, you know, the best way to watch television. But they've become obviously popular in their own right. Now we're at a point where Paramount has everything it needs, and Warner has everything it needs, and Disney has everything it needs to become these streaming powerhouses. Disney's been doing a bundle for a couple of years now with ESPN Plus, Disney Plus, and Hulu. Then we have Discovery buying HBO, or excuse me, buying Warner, and planning to shift everything from HBO Max onto the Discovery Plus platform, which is insane because I just used the HBO Max platform earlier today and I think it's a fantastic one and I don't want to have to go on Discovery Plus because if you ever used it, I've only used it once. Like truly, I think I got like a free trial for a couple of weeks and then I think I opened it maybe two times. And it was so confusing to find a show. First of all, I only knew Food Network shows and HGTV shows. I didn't know anything else. Second, it was hard to find anything unless you were specifically searching for Restaurant Impossible. They do like 40 episodes a year. Isn't that insane? I recorded that show on YouTube TV, and it is crazy the amount of episodes in one season. And I know they do everything in 2 days, but Jesus, it is, oh my God. Gordon Ramsay wishes he could do that for, Kitchen Nightmares or whatever shows he's doing. So now, this week, in fact, Showtime stuff has been added to Paramount Plus, and not in a way that they've done it before, where a couple of months ago it was, hey, you can watch the first three episodes of The Man Who Fell to Earth. Now it's you can watch all of Dexter. You can watch movies that were only on Showtime. You can watch I don't know, Spartacus. I don't know what's on Showtime. You can watch Desus and Mira. But you can watch all that stuff that was on Showtime, the app proper, now is on Paramount Plus. And at some point, I think we're gonna see everything from Hulu move on to Disney Plus, which sucks. I think that's gonna happen. I think they need to keep those two separated. I wish they would dissolve ESPN Plus and put it into Hulu, and then just, charge $15 a month for Hulu. But I mean, they charge $15 a month for Hulu now. So. And then at some and now we're gonna have Walmart Plus members are gonna be able to get a complimentary subscription to Paramount Plus. Walmart is basically doing the same thing as Amazon Prime, which Prime offers Prime Video alongside its monthly no cost shipping, or 2 day shipping, or whatever it's called. Vudu after the v I don't know if they I don't know if Walmart really includes Vudu in anything, but I because they there's no way because Vudu is just like the Apple Video, Apple Movies, Apple TV. That's what it's called. It's only a matter of time until Apple TV jumps up in price. They can't keep that for $5. I would love them to, because I'll stay subscribed because I subscribe to anything. I'll subscribe to anything. There's one streaming service I don't have. Can you guess which one? It starts with a D and ends in Discovery. My coworkers get it all for free. It's not fair. Give me that full-time job. I'm not a contracted job. The bundles are coming for us. The bundles are coming and we can't stop it. And then eventually we're going to move back into a territory where it's if you want to get everything, then you gotta pay for just like three things, and it's still gonna cost you $300. That would be a bad deal, wouldn't it? I mean, even Apple's in the bundle game too. They point out they have Apple One, which is that thing where you can get Apple Music and Apple Fitness and Apple TV and Apple Arcade and iCloud, all in one package and something else, and all in one package. For up to $30 per month. Bundles are back. And we will see different mixes of it all. Remember, there was a. Oh, yeah. There's a bunch of student bundles. We got Spotify and Hulu. And I think that might be over. Actually, I don't even know. There's more student bundles with Spotify and Showtime. Oh, it's still going on, I think. Okay, cool. It's just bad, man. It's just bad, and I'm part of the problem. Hey, continuing on the streaming service thing, isn't it sad how SNL, I think, got rid of Melissa Villaseñor, Alex Moffat, and Aristotle Atari. Those are some very funny people, and even if Aristotle only had like what one breakout character, he was still a very funny character. Alex is fantastic. Melissa's great. I wish they and learn how to utilize her. I think that's what everybody has. If you're a fan of SNL, I think that's what every person would say. They would look at Melissa and go, they don't know how to use her. And yeah, it could be two different things. It could be maybe she didn't try hard enough, and maybe they didn't try hard enough. I also learned that she's the second Latina to be on the show. Noelle Wells. She was Latina. Looked it up. It's true. Blew my mind. It blew my mind. I had no idea. And Alex was just fantastic. I did read a comment, I think, on the as soon as this article went up, I went to the Live from New York subreddit, and I saw which I hate going to Reddit in the first place, but I had to see, I had to type in, I had to go and find what people were saying. And someone's comment was, no, I think this is on Never Enough Funny. I don't know. Who cares? I know. I think it was on this Reddit. And someone said, now Mikey Day is going to do all the white guy in suit parts. It's true. Okay. This comes from Variety, written by Jim Aswad. Jim is spelled JM. Not my favorite spelling. Music publishers, streaming services. Avoid another battle royale by setting royalty rates for the next 4 years. As you may know, Spotify, Tidal, Apple Music, YouTube Music, all of Deezer, all of these streaming platforms set rates for artists to get paid. Oh, excuse me. For publishers to get paid and for artists to get paid nothing. And this is an issue that has been up in the air for like I think every time they renew this, it sometimes stalls. But finally, the rates have been settled ahead of time. For years 2023 to 2027, they're 15.35%. Apparently, it's a surprise. And the what's NMPA? Nashville Music Publishers Association, the Nashville Songwriters Association International, and the Digital Media Association. Those are the people that are doing the negotiations. The NMPA, the Publishers Association, has been saying for months that it would push for 20% rate for the forthcoming period. However, sources tell Variety that concessions were made on both sides, likely in the form of modifications that reach beyond the headline rate, such as the way that, quote, bundles work. Such as discounted streaming subscription rates for family and student plans. We were just talking about that. And per subscriber minimums are treated. Publishers won a big victory in July when the Copyright Royalty Board upheld its 2018 decision to raise the rate to 15.1% from the previous 11.4%. All this means is that the publishers are going to get paid a little bit more, and your artists are going to get paid a little bit more. Not by much. You still need to support them by going to shows or buying music or buying whatever shirt they're shilling on their websites. I saw a God, I can't I don't remember where I saw this. But here I found another chart. A chart for how much each streaming platform pays. Tidal pays the most because it has a tier where you can pay artists that you listen to. Apple's next. I think this is wrong. I think this is per stream. I think this is wrong, but Tidal definitely is up there. I believe YouTube pays a lot more than what people think. But there are calculators out there to help you with this. The artists need to get paid, and they have to, these publishers go to battle, and I mean the publishers are getting the most money out of all of this, and it just, I don't like it, and it stinks. But that's what happens when you have to deal with this crap. Wow, I've been going for a long time. Hey, let's continue. Variety. Brian Steinberg, broadcasters boost afternoon news and bid to thwart streaming rivals. Now that I read most of this stuff, this might have been meant for news time. Let's talk about it. Broadcasters have been, and more importantly, not more importantly, more on ahead of time. It's been ABC who's introduced a 1 p.m. hour. To that is more that is akin to their news to their morning show, Today Show, or excuse me, I'm sorry, Good Morning America, that has that is they're trying to capture that morning show style, but in the afternoon. I don't know when people are supposed to, like, the only people I can see turning on broadcast news in the middle of the day are like older people who are waiting for soap operas to come on. Each weekday at 1 p.m. on ABC, Amy Robach, T.J. Holmes, and Dr. Jennifer Ashton host the hour of afternoon news called GMA 3, What You Need to Know. Three is their third hour. They've been doing this. I think GMA has been doing this for about a year and a half now, or something like that. They've been doing it for a minute, and but it has since transformed into something else. Like this, in a recent episode, they opened the hour with how monkeypox is affecting children, as well as the flooding that's happening down here in the south, well, down here in the southwest. And then they talk to famous people too. It's the same thing, but I think a little bit more condensed. I think they have more room to do, feature pieces, kind of like how CBS Mornings, their 8 o'clock hour is more feature pieces. In September, NBC is looking to expand their own field. They canceled their, excuse me, they moved Days of Our Lives to Peacock, which I don't think, like, that's such a, like, old people. I think if they need to think about, look, I'm sure the ratings for soap opera shows aren't exactly the highest things in the world. However, I do believe that there is an older generation that doesn't know how streaming works, that just turns on the TV and says, "I can't wait to see my stories." And when they see Days of Our Lives go to Peacock, they're gonna go, "What the hell is this? What is Peacock?" Now, they've introduced NBC News Daily, or they're going to introduce NBC News Daily. I don't know what this show is. The premise, depending on the hour of the day, Kate Snow and Aaron Gilchrist, or Morgan Radford and Vicky Nguyen, will update viewers on breaking national and international stories. But there's not that much. I think if people really want to see that type of news, they're going to go to MSNBC or CNN or Fox News or CNBC to see some midday stuff. I don't think people. I don't know, because whenever I go to, like, let's say I go to a public, like a store, or there's a Kroger up here that on the Beltline, this man-made walkway that or pathway that has TVs outside and a bar outside, and the TVs, all they do is play sports or news all the time, and I can only imagine, like, or at a mechanic. They have a TV on, it's on ABC. This is this, they're only going to see this stuff. I don't, it's, I don't know. Afternoon TV viewers are just, that is such a broad yet limited distinction. And you can watch stuff anytime. I don't know. It works, I guess. Now, continuing off of that, we're going to bounce back between these two stories. I don't know. Jennifer Moss over at Variety writes that NBC considers abandoning its 10 p.m. primetime hour for local programming. Again, the broadcasters are trying to step away and focus on something that is more streaming conscious. And if they're, I don't know if NBCU, I don't know if their 10 p.m. slot is not doing well compared to years past. It probably is not, but compared to the competitors now, then. I don't know how is this going to affect them in the long run. So this current TV season, 2022 to 2023, it will not be affected. But should they go through with it, then the next TV season, 2023 to 2024, will be. There are a few 10 p.m. shows that they have. So what this means is NBC, they will only primetime broadcasting, typically on broadcast, means that on network TV means that a primetime TV slot on network TV means that from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m., those are the 3 hours that networks get to put their biggest, most special shows on. So, NBC's Blacklist, The Voice, So You Think You Can Dance, all that stuff. Why did I name oh, and CBS. CBS is the network too. There's Survivor. And what's on Fox? I don't know. Shazam. Was that is that Beat Shazam? That's what it's called. what's going on in this world? But that's the time that they have in order to get the best advertisers and put their best shows on. And if NBC gives that time slot back, then a local news network, like let's say Atlanta, New York, whatever, Boston, they could air another hour of news. Do we need that? No, not really. No, I'm saying no, period. And so that means by the time you get to late night, you have from 10 o'clock until 11:45. That's an hour 45 minutes of news. That excuse me, 2 hours. No, an hour. Hour 45. 10 to 11. That's an hour. 45 minutes. Yeah. Ooh, I gotta do it. The 10 p.m. shows that would basically be affected are Quantum Leap, The Reboot, New Amsterdam, Chicago PD, and Law and Order Organized Crime. And this would not affect the late night shows that are Jimmy Fallon, Tonight Show, and Late Night with Seth Meyers that start at 11:35 and 12:35 p.m. Or excuse me, 11:35 p.m. and 12:35 a.m. However, there's a chance NBC could consider shifting start times for those talkers if the 10 p.m. hour is handed over to affiliates. Perhaps a half hour or an hour earlier. There's also a chance NBC stations could opt to schedule an hour and a half of news, keeping those late night chat shows in their same place. I don't think this makes sense. I think if you're really hurting for, I yes, the 10 p.m. hour can is utilized, for the broad for one of the broadcast shows or whatnot. But I do think that you can put your best foot forward. We've seen in the past couple of years sh just a shifting dialogue when it comes to how shows are put out, on cable. I remember Always Sunny, South Park. I remember when those shows, it became a huge deal when they could say the S word. And then now I just watched Little Lucy. What is it called on FX? Lucy sitcom. Okay, that just brought up I Love Lucy, Lucy FX. Jesus, it's not even coming up. Hold on. Lucy is on FX. Lucy FX Jones. Little Demon. Jesus Christ. If I type in Lucy, it needs to pop up. But I just watched Little Demon, and even though that show is on FX and then comes on Hulu, it was fully like not bleeped all the curse words in the world. And on CNN, you can say these words too. So I think broadcast needs to really adopt those rules. I know there's FCC standards and everything. I worked in this industry. I work in this industry. Not worked. I do currently got a knock on wood. I work in this industry. I used to have a job where I had to deal with all the FCC stuff. However, I do think that there needs to be a loosening of the rules. Maybe NBC, Fox, CBS, and ABC can go to the FCC and say, "Hey, maybe we just need a little bit more leeway when it comes to some things." Yeah, I'm watching The Challenge All Stars on Paramount Plus, but it is a CBS show. But on Paramount Plus, it is uncensored, and they say everything. It's so crazy to hear a curse word on a reality show like that. But this goes back to the mid-afternoon news. Is there enough for this news to succeed in what it needs to do? You're just, or are you just reiterating the stories from the morning prior? On a weekend like this, Labor Day weekend, when there's no news, what's your story going to be about today? And yes, not everybody watches the morning news, but we have local news at noon that comes on, and then to follow that up with another thing of news. I mean, if anything, people are going to go and watch some other news on cable, or they'll read about it. People don't read. So apply that same principle to the 10 p.m. hour. Do you have enough shows to fill that hour? Yes. Is this just you not wanting to spend on shows? Yes. Just make good TV shows. You don't have to worry about it. Okay. I'm done. Listen, if you like what you heard here, head to the website, cpluscomedy.com, where there are interviews with comedians like Mo Welch, where there's some other videos. I promise I will get to news time. I promise you. I promise you. Want to watch the video version of this show, news time as well, which is like The Daily Show, except way less funny. Go to youtube.com/cpluscomedy. You can see me sitting in one of my new shirts. It's too tight in the arms because my arms are gigantic. Oh, speaking of which, I for this wedding, for this bachelor party I told you about, I went to we got the suit. I got the suit. I bought my suit, and I was so concerned that it was going to be the wrong size. So I went. I live above. This is too much information. I went to a dry cleaner to get my measurements, and then I ordered the suit. And the suit came. The jacket is fine. I got a jacket. I got a jacket of pants, obviously. The jacket's fine, and it fits my upper body great, even though I have like a pronounced chest and big shoulders and big arms and stuff. Not no big deal. I work out. Even though I'm very, muscular and toned. Same thing for my legs. My legs are very muscular and toned. The pants, they're the biggest size. They had two choices. They had two choices. They had modern. They had slim. Slim is obviously going to slim down. Modern is what I thought going to be a little bit bigger. Was not. I put on these pants. They when I say it looks, I look like I'm wearing leggings. That's how tight they are. Like my, it's everything is like just popping out. And I promise you, if I wear those pants for more than 1 hour, they will split. So now I have to figure out how to buy the same color pants somewhere else, and I don't know where. And that was the modern, and that was my waist size. Or maybe I'll just give them a call and see. Do you guys have any more pants? The thing is, I went on the website last night to see if I can send an exchange. They are out of all of their pants. They're out of everything up until 42. And I don't know what to do, so I have to give them a call. So that's my story. The suit looks great on me, though. I said to a couple of my exes, I'm like, you're missing out. All right, I got to end this show. Twitter, Instagram, at C Plus Comedy. Me on Twitter, Instagram, at Chad Black White. Like us on Facebook. Rate, review, subscribe. Tell your friends about this. And hey, if you want to send, if you listen to this show and you manage a comedian and they have a good following, just send them my way, baby. Send me an interview or let me get an interview. Thank you for listening. I'm gonna pull up the outro music and we're gonna tune in and we're gonna do this. Goodbye.